Well, whether you loved him at the time or you didn't like the way that he carried on, you couldn't help but have respect for Muhammad Ali, not only as a boxer, but as a man, one of the most outstanding sporting figures of the 20th century. To find out more about his life and his career, Paul Upham is our guest from Fox Sports. Paul, welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Muhammad Ali told us many, many times from the very start of his career that he was the greatest. How great was Ali?
There's two parts to that. There is Ali, the boxer, the fighter, and in my opinion, the greatest heavyweight of all time, the fastest, the most nimble, most skills, too fast. He fought and dominated in the toughest heavyweight era of all time, and to me, that makes him the greatest when it comes to a boxer. As far as the man is concerned, he believed in civil rights for everybody, and he put his mouth and his word forward to the point where he didn't box for 3 years. He forgo his career as heavyweight world champion in what he believed in, that he shouldn't be drafted and he shouldn't have to go and fight somebody else on the other side of the planet. And he was certainly sincere to his word. So from that point of view, it was probably a greater achievement than his actual boxing career.
We'll get back to that in a moment, because that is a remarkable thing, that absolutely at the peak of his skill and his fame, he walked away from it because he was stripped of his title. Let's go back to, say, Rome 1960, light heavyweight. He won the gold medal. How good a boxer was he then?
Look, you could see in those early days as a light heavyweight that he had the speed and movement, and he fought differently to other fighters. He didn't follow all of the rules of the time of how you should move and how you should keep your hand up, protect your chin. I remember his trainer, Angelo Dundee, saying later on that he didn't really try and change him. He just tried to encourage him to do a little bit more extra of those basics. But he had his own genuine style, which you could look at for the first time and say, hey, there's something different about this guy.
So he then turns professional. He wins the world championship pretty soon, but there's always a doubt over his defeats of Sonny Liston, because people say that Liston took a dive and they were hugely controversial fights. I think the first one in Miami, the second one in Maine.
Yeah, well, in the first fight, he seemed to be winning the fight very easily. He was totally dominating Sonny. He was a lot taller than Sonny. He had a great reach advantage. And then after a couple of rounds, all of a sudden he couldn't see. There was something in his eyes, and you could see for one round he was just trying to keep Sonny off because he's got this burning sensation in his eyes. Angelo Dundee said when he got back to the corner, he took the whole bucket of water and threw it in his eyes and washed it out. And quite often for many years, people suspected that Liston's people had put something on his gloves to get into Muhammad Ali's eyes to try and put him off from winning that fight. And that was when he said, I must be the greatest. He won that fight. And then a year later, Ali was out for a year because he had an injury. He came back and had a contracted rematch with Sonny Liston. And that is the fight where it's he called it the anchor punch. It was a punch you didn't really see, and you see Sonny Liston going down, and it probably looks a little bit suspicious, and no one's really ever been able to come up with a definite answer as to what happened, whether Liston did take a dive or whether it was such a super fast punch, as Ali said, that you couldn't even see it.
Because people didn't necessarily call it the anchor punch, they called it the phantom punch, didn't they?
Well, I didn't really see a punch. And then Ali would say later on, Jake, and he said, look, that's how fast I am. I can punch. And you couldn't even see me knock Sonny Liston down. But look, it certainly looked suspicious. The referee at the time didn't really, he didn't count initially. Then he went over and he got the count and he counted. And Liston was sort of rolling on the ground, looked like he could get up. So there was a lot of suspicion about that fight.
Yes, indeed. So this was at the end of a great period of heavyweight boxers, talking about Sonny Liston, Ezzard Charles, even Ingemar Johansson, going back to Joe Louis as well. What happened between, say, when Ali won, or Cassius Clay as he was then, he won the title for the first time, and then when he came up against some really great fighters later on, most notably Joe Frazier? What happened? Who was he fighting, and then why was he stripped of the title?
Well, he made a few defences after the rematch with Liston, and then there was his classification was changed, so he could be enlisted in the American Armed Forces. And he said at that stage that, you know, he had that famous line, he had no quarrel with Vietnam Cong on the other side of the planet. So he was labelled a draft dodger. There was an extended period of legal battles, and he was convicted. He didn't do any jail time, but he was stripped of his title. In 1967. So he didn't fight from 1967 all the way up to 1971, where he did have his conviction overturned by the American government, and he was allowed to fight again. And then in 1971, Joe Frazier, who was then the world champion, the undefeated world champion, fighting the comebacking Muhammad Ali, who was also undefeated.
Indeed.
And that fight they labelled the fight of the century at Madison Square Garden in New York.
Yeah, first time two undefeated heavyweight champions had met. But also around about that time, he has become a Muslim. He's converted to the Nation of Islam, which, boy, it would be very controversial to do it now. I don't know whether it was as controversial then, because most people probably wouldn't know too much about Islam then, but it was still something that a lot of people in America thought, hang on, this bloke's not one of us.
Well, I think with the combination of him being so brash and outspoken, which was totally unheard of then, we talk about these days that the sportsmen doing their trash talk. Ali was the first trash talker, but he wasn't a mean-spirited trash talker. But the combination of him converting to Islam, changing his name and being such an outspoken figure, he was probably one of the most hated men in America at the time. And it's so interesting to see, as his career went on, he totally turned that around and became one of the most loved sportsmen of all time.
Okay, so he fights Frazier at Madison Square Garden, the fight of the century, as you say. He didn't win it. Frazier actually retained his world heavyweight title. Why? How did he beat him? And what was Ali thinking at that point? What was going to happen with his career?
Well, people got to remember that was the prime years of Muhammad Ali as the boxer. As great as he was inside the ring, he lost 3.5 years of his career. And in those 3.5 years, he lost a bit of pace. He lost a bit of footwork. He lost a bit of speed. He came back 3.5 years older, and he wasn't the same fighter he was. He couldn't fight. He couldn't dance. He used to talk about how he used to dance in the ring. He couldn't do that anymore. And he was probably a bit rusty after 3.5 years off. And I think if you put that to most fighters in their prime, if you take them away for 3.5 years, they're not going to be the same when they come back. He probably needed a couple more fights before he fought Frazier. He went straight to the big fight. And look, it was a close fight, but Joe Frazier knocked him down in round 15 and he won a points decision. And at this stage, people are saying, well, that's the end of Muhammad Ali's boxing career. Yeah.
You say that he was the first trash talker, and certainly was one of the first most boastful international sportsmen. But there was some malice in it. The way he treated and talked about Joe Frazier was disgraceful, frankly, from one black man to another.
As third parties looking on to us, you could see that.
And Joe Frazier thought that as well.
Well, he did. I talked to Joe Frazier about that a few years ago when he came to Sydney and to Australia for a function for Joe Bugner, the other heavyweight who fought Muhammad Ali and Frazier. And, yeah, look, Joe Frazier never forgave Muhammad Ali for what he said. He belittled him. He said some very bad things about him. And famously, Joe Frazier, when he was asked about Muhammad Ali later on at the Atlanta Games, where he famously lit the torch to light the flame, Frazier said if he was there, he would have pushed him in. So that was the level of hatred that was there. But from Ali's side, to him, he was just promoting the fight. He was a showman. He was promoting the fight. So deep down, only Ali would probably know if he really intensely was trying to rile Joe and belittle him. But from Frazier's perspective, he hated Ali.
But, you know, because of the fact that he had been so appallingly treated, Ali, when he was Clay, because of the racism in America, he surely must have known that those comments, those taunts, were not the right thing to do at a time when African Americans were still trying to find their way in American society.
You're probably right, but Ali did what Ali did, and that was his thing. And only deep down, as I said, he would know. He's the only one to know if he really understood what he was doing. But from our perspective watching on the outside, it was pretty mean and cruel. But generally, apart from Frazier, his thing was that he wasn't mean, that it was there was some good-natured lightheartedness in what he said, and quite often he would make you laugh.
Okay. Well, calling him an Uncle Tom, though, is about as big a slur as you can have in the African-American community. But anyway, Frazier lost the title eventually to George Foreman. Meanwhile, Ali was being beaten by Ken Norton, a famous fight where he had his jaw broken. But finally, Ali fought Foreman, one of the most famous fights of all time in Kinshasa in Zaire, the Rumble in the Jungle, 1974, wins the title back. How did he do it?
He just outsmarted him, and he did a completely different way. As I said earlier, that he fought with a lot of speed and movement in his early career. In this fight, he just stood on the ropes, and he just let George Foreman punch himself out. I don't know if that was his original ploy going in, but you saw in that fantastic documentary that won the Academy Award in 1999, When We Were Kings, you saw the behind the scenes of what happened down there. They actually got stuck down there for 5 weeks because George Foreman suffered a cut in training. But he basically just stayed on the ropes, and he encouraged George Foreman to punch and punch and punch. Foreman had never been the full distance in his entire career because he'd knocked everybody out. And people were actually fearful for Muhammad Ali's life, let alone his career, because they thought George Foreman was going to destroy him. He was going to hurt him once and for all. He took all of the punches of Foreman. Round 8, Foreman ran out of gas, and Muhammad Ali finished him off and knocked him out. It was one of the most unbelievable upsets in boxing history.
Paul Upham is our guest, talking about Muhammad Ali. So then, as a champion for the second time, what was Ali's career like?
It was basically just fight after fight. He did a bit of a world tour. He had a number of fights in Europe. And he probably fought on a little bit too long. But the fight which probably did the most damage was the year after he fought Foreman, when he had a third fight with Joe Frazier, the Thriller in Manila, where the two of them went at it for full 15 rounds. And Ali famously said after the fight, where Joe Frazier wasn't allowed to come out of his corner with one round to go, that it was the closest thing ever that he came to death.
One of the most sickening fights to watch. Fantastic book written about it by Mark Cram. There's a great documentary about it as well, which is as good possibly as When We Were Kings, called Ghosts of Manila. At that point, he was described as the most recognisable face on the planet, hugely popular throughout Africa, of course, and America, Australia. He came to Australia, I remember, for this shambolic fight with a wrestler. He was doing strange things like that at the time as well.
Yeah, there was a fight with the Japanese wrestler Inoki, which was a terrible exhibition. That basically Inoki stood in the middle of the ring, actually sat in the middle of the ring for 15 rounds and just kicked at Ali's legs. Yeah. And Ali suffered terrible bruising to his legs in that fight. And he was paid money for that. And Ali had a huge entourage, and he was very generous with his money. And everywhere he went, he spent money and he gave money away. And that's one of the reasons he fought so regularly. And he fought on way too long. And it was those fights at the end of his career which many people suspect contributed to him developing Parkinson's.
So if he had retired after the Thriller in Manila 1975, that's a long career for a boxer anyway, given that he had won the gold medal in 1960. That's 15 years as a boxer, if not counting the years before that and golden gloves and all that sort of stuff. He keeps going and loses his title again, I think, to Leon Spinks, and then wins it back for one last time. But he was fighting as late as, what, 1980, 81?
Yeah, well, he had the rematch with Spinks. Spinks had only had a handful of fights, seven or eight fights, and he was just thrown in as a nobody, and he upset Muhammad Ali. He was way past his best. Ali got into shape for one final time. He got the title back, and then he retired for 2 years, and then Don King offered him a lot of money to come out of retirement to fight the then-champion Larry Holmes in 1980, and he was an absolute shell of himself. I remember Sylvester Stallone, the actor who was at ringside, the famous Rocky actor, saying that it was like watching your child on the railway tracks with the train coming and you couldn't do anything to stop the train. Larry Holmes just destroyed Muhammad Ali that night, and he hurt him really badly.
And Larry Holmes is a great, great fighter. There's no doubt about that. This was the era of legendary names, when people knew who the world heavyweight champion was, and the world heavyweight champion was as famous as the person who won the 100 metres at the Olympics. These days, you'd be hard-pressed to guess or know who one of the many world heavyweight champions were. Ali made it that. There's no doubt about that. So he retired. What did he do in retirement?
Well, he had a little retirement, and he had one more fight in 81 against Trevor Burbeck, and he came back as a 40-year-old with grey hair, and he was totally embarrassed. He never fought again. He wanted to pursue these humanitarian causes, which he did, and he went around the world on these different missions trying to help different people. I saw a photo today which was so interesting. There's a man who wants to throw himself off a building somewhere in America on the ninth floor, and Ali's looking out the window at him trying to talk him down.
Amazing.
He did some work for the United Nations. I know he went at one stage there, he went into the Middle East to rescue some some American hostages who've been held there. So his whole thing was peace on earth, goodwill to all men and women. And I think he's achieved that. And he used his fame and his influence to try and encourage people to move up and move on beyond their limits in their lives. And he also brought money to wherever he went. So all the money he was able to get from appearances and memorabilia sales and all that sort of thing, he put towards his charitable causes.
He seemed to meet everyone. There are photos of him, of course, with the Beatles in Miami in 1964, pictures today of him meeting Gary Sobers, the great cricketer. He transcended boxing the way that possibly no other heavyweight champion or any boxer has ever done.
And he had such an influence. I was able to work with the famous writer, Thomas Hauser, who actually did the biography, The Life and Times of Muhammad Ali. And he told me of a story that they once went together to see President Clinton in the White House. And the security wanted to take Muhammad Ali in to see Clinton, and they wouldn't let Thomas Hauser go with him. He said he hadn't been approved on the list. And Ali just said, if Thomas Hauser's not going in, I'm not going in. He stood up, and then next thing you know, they ushered the two of them in to meet the president. That's the sort of influence that Muhammad Ali had.
Was he a brutal fighter?
He was in the ring. People accused him of being a little bit over the top, and some of the personal relations he had with some of the fighters wasn't good. And there was one particular fighter that Floyd Patterson there, who said he wasn't going to call him by his Muhammad Ali name, called him Cassius Clay after he changed it. And during the fight, as he beat him up, he was yelling at him, "What's my name? What's my name?" So he could have a ruthless streak. But the Ali that most people remember outside of the ring is a lovable rogue, a people person, a friendly person, that big smile. He was gregarious, he was over the top, and he put on a show.
You talked about how he was so strong in the civil rights movement, but post-September 11, 2001, where he was the most high-profile Muslim in America, and maybe his health was not great, even though this was 15 years ago, do you think he could have done more to kind of breach that divide between some Americans and Muslim Americans?
If his communication skills were there, yes, I think he could have done that. But Parkinson's doesn't affect his mind capacity. It's a motor skills issue. And unfortunately, he wasn't able to express himself anymore, and he rarely spoke in public over the last 15 years. So unfortunately, I don't think he had the opportunity to be able to do that. But he's so widely respected. I think if Muhammad Ali had tried to do something and was able to do that, I think he would have influenced a lot of people around the world.
Okay. Do you think that maybe there was a bad influence as well because of that trash talk that you say that he really helped develop, that a lot of fighters and a lot of other sportsmen who weren't as good as him followed in his wake trying to do the same thing that possibly brought themselves and their sport into disrepute?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Look, so many people tried to imitate him, but they were not a Muhammad Ali, and he had a certain style in the way he did it. He had a certain brashness, but I never saw it as too over the top. With these days, any sportsman now will make all these predictions and they'll be boastful and over the top. At the time, it was different because back then the promoter or the manager did all the talking. The fighter, Joe Louis, who was one of the all-time great heavyweights, he rarely spoke. He never made predictions. So when people saw Muhammad Ali, they couldn't believe it was so totally different. And he did set a path. And Floyd Mayweather Jr., the great boxer who recently retired as pound for pound number one, he said today when he was interviewed, he said that the reason he was able to make the money he made, the millions and millions, was because of the path set by Muhammad Ali.
What about the heavyweight ranks these days? We need an Ali, don't we? Don't we need one person to signify what heavyweight boxing is about?
The problem with boxing today is it's too much of a business. And the great thing that Muhammad Ali did as a boxer, that he took on all comers. He didn't put obstacles in the way of the great fights. The problem today with boxing, we saw recently with the Floyd Mayweather-Manny Pacquiao fight, that was 6 years in the making. There was all these reasons why the fight never occurred. Muhammad Ali never did that. He went out there in the toughest era and he fought all of the great names. He fought all of his rivals. His thing was, if you think this guy is better than me, I'm going to prove you wrong. People said, Muhammad Ali, you can't fight George Foreman. George Foreman's undefeated. He's the hardest puncher of all time. You can't fight him. You're going to be hurt. Ali wanted that fight more than anything else, and he took it and he won. The problem with today is it's about the business, all the maneuvering, trying to get leverage to get more money, and that is what's hurting the sport of boxing.
His funeral will take place in his hometown of Louisville, Kentucky. He was known as the Louisville Lip at one point because he had so much to say. People have long speculated about Ali's funeral as it being the biggest funeral of all time, that it will draw people from sport, from entertainment, from politics, from everywhere. It's going to be an amazing experience, isn't it?
He's one of the icons of the world. People know him throughout. And if you never saw him fight at the time, you've heard of his exploits or you've seen the videos and the documentary. And he was certainly unique. And I think the funeral process has already started today. There's so much outpourings of emotion from all around the world, from all types of people in politics, business, in sport, and just everyday life. Everyone had an opinion of Muhammad Ali, and most of it was pretty positive. And he's going to be sadly missed. But I look at it this way. It's a sad day, but it's also an opportunity for us to celebrate his life and all of those wonderful things inside and outside the boxing ring. Well, he was the heavyweight champion of the world. It meant something. There was a prestige there to the title, and he added to it the way that he competed and the way that he carried himself and the way that he did things. And look, he was special. I remember as a nine-year-old watching on my grandmother's lounge in 1980, he fought Larry Holmes, and I remember being sad. A nine-year-old boy from Australia had been touched by Ali in a way that I knew that this was a special man, and it was a sad thing what was happening to him. And that was the thing about Muhammad Ali. He was able to get through and touch people in their own special way.
Paul, I really appreciate your time. Thank you very much for telling us about Muhammad Ali.
No problem. Thank you.
And that is Paul Upham from Fox Sports talking about Muhammad Ali.